Van Building in the heart of Ronville. This is the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting. Yowza, yowza, yowza.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Watch your step around here.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Hey, welcome to the show. It is the Ron Van Dam program. Thank you so much for attending. You will be sorely missed by those that are saying, "Where's my friend?" Oh, my friend's listening to the Ron Van Dam show. I sorely miss my friend. Don't worry about it. The show's not that long. And besides, you have no friends. You think your little acquaintances are friends? No. Ask them to drive you to the airport or to help you move. You'll find out you have no friends. All right. Start the show on that cheery note. Yeah, those of you who think that your Facebook friends is an indication of how many people love you. Okay, Mrs. and Mr. Delusional. Whatever. I have 700 Facebook friends. That's how many people love me. No, that's not how many. That's how many people live in Nigeria. Don't go there. Stop with your Facebook stuff. Anybody who talks about their Facebook stuff, you got to just turn around and walk away. It's okay, fine. All right, someday you'll wake up to reality, but thank you anyway. Where do I go to be shamed and ridiculed? I go to Facebook. The internet is just full of people that don't like things. I guess I got to raise my hand. I mean, but I don't go to the internet to do it. Oh my God. Ugh. Ooh. Ooh. Ugh. You can get diseases on that thing. Ugh. Yeah. Oh, when things go viral. That's because there's viruses. There's viruses in your computer. Don't open up that email. There's a virus in it. Yeah. You can't. Don't touch it. Don't touch your computer. There's a virus there. It's just waiting to destroy you. I'm sick of being destroyed by viruses, by the way. Our entire society is being careful about getting a virus. Whether it be COVID or whether it be something that's hanging around your computer there, you know, you open up the wrong thing or you download something that's wrong, you're going to get a virus. Here's the odd part. Virus, not good. Going viral, apparently good. Is that the only word we have? Viral and virus? What's wrong with you? What's wrong with society? I might be a little bit older than you. I might not. I don't know. But I just kind of think that things used to, when things were simpler, everything was great. I used to write things down with a piece of paper and a pencil. And I was happy with that. Now I'm storing things in a cloud. I don't know where my cloud is. I look up in the sky, there's a couple of clouds, but they're floating around, man. I don't want my information up there. They tell me it's safe to have your information in a cloud. I don't think so. Doesn't make me feel any better. I had to paint one of my bathrooms over the weekend. Painting is interesting. You look at the room that you have to paint the walls, and you say to yourself, "I can do that. What do I need, a brush and some paint? I can do that. I got nothing else to do. Yeah, I'll paint the room myself. Why would I hire a painter? Why don't those people do? Seriously, I can paint. I'm not Rembrandt or anything. I'm not going to do the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. I'm I'm just doing a ceiling white. I can paint a wall. And then you go to the hardware store, one of these places. There's only three that I know of. There's Ace Hardware, Lowe's, and Home Depot. Beyond that, I think we're just playing games. Then you find out, how much is a gallon of paint? $50? What? Yeah, this is a one coat. Well, I do need a one coat paint. I'm not painting a wall and then painting it again. I'm not an idiot. If you have paint where it's just one coat, I like a coat. Just one coat. That'll be $50. Whoa. That's going to be one expensive room. And you get the paintbrushes, rollers, whatever they have. And then you have to, to get a ladder, and you got to get shoes, and you got to make sure. The worst part about painting a wall or painting a room is that damn masking tape. Oh, what a pain in the ass that is. Every time you mask off so that you don't get any ceiling paint on the wall and you're going to have wall paint on the ceiling. Oh my God, you're confusing me now. That takes like 5 hours to tape a room. And then you look at the thing and you say, okay, this should take me no more than 10 minutes. I'm just putting paint on a wall. I mean, a second grader can do that if they were tall enough to reach the wall. A second grader could do it. So, and then you start painting. And then all of a sudden you realize one thing that you didn't realize before you started painting the room. Painting sucks. Yeah, some people think, well, this will be a very serene activity. I'll just paint a wall. I mean, what could be harder than that? Nothing is harder than that. I chose a nice color gray to paint my my bathroom wall. Bathroom's not a big room. Doesn't matter. Still a pain in the ass. The paint covered really well. But after about, see, my tolerance level is very, very low. It's very low. In other words, I have none. So I started painting a couple of strokes, and then I realized that quickly, this is going to suck. And what I thought would take me 10 minutes, I was going on my second hour. You know, a lot of people say, it's boring to watch paint dry. It's boring to put the paint on the wall, too. It was awful. It was just awful. The end result, got a little paint on the ceiling by mistake. Got a little paint on my pants. Got a little paint on the heating duct, on the baseboard. A lot of paint where the paint shouldn't have been. It's not easy. It's not easy to do. And I don't know. It's just, what a waste of time. But when you're finished, you look at the room and you say, wow, it looks good, but I'm never doing this again. It's the same reaction I get when I drink too much. Oh, I had fun doing it, but I'm never going to drink again. I'm not doing that again. I feel awful. Well, I didn't have fun painting the room, and I didn't have fun after either. Some people have paint parties. Yay, we're going to have a party. We're all going to paint. It sounds good. And of course, there's no paint party without pizza. Somebody has to go out and get pizza. Somehow, to attract human beings, you have to hold a cheese and tomato sauce and wedge in front of them in order to lure them to do something. I'm going to have a paint party on Saturday. Oh, I'm not sure. There's going to be pizza. Okay. Come on, man. Don't do pizza and beer. Don't get your friends loaded up on beer and then ask them to paint your room. That's not good. I don't want my friends touching my room, to be honest. I don't want my friends in my room at all. So I don't do paint parties. I think that's just really stupid. Paint party means, hey, come on over and paint my room for me. And I'll get some pizza while you're doing it. It's not a good idea because most people can't paint well either. There's some people that are just really sloppy. But anyway, the room is done, and now it's a pretty gray bathroom, and it's nice and everything. I have a luxuriously beautiful room to take a dump in, and I think that's important. Well, it's true. When you're sitting on a toilet, the only thing you can do is just look at the walls, you know, and think of better days. Anyway, I've talked about this on the show before. The only people I'll drive to the airport are people who swear that they won't come back. You know, that then it's worth it. I'm going to Europe. Can you drive me to the airport? Sure. And then pick me up. Oh, no, I'm not picking you up. I'm not getting you from the airport. No, if you go to Europe, you have to stay there. Get somebody else to bring you back. I ain't doing that. I'll gladly get you away from me, but I'm not bringing you back to me. No, that I don't do. Do the Uber thing. Get into somebody else's car. I can't do the Uber. I won't do an Uber. I've been in an Uber maybe twice in my life, and both times I felt very uncomfortable. Like the locks on the doors were going to snap shut, and they'd be taking me to some odd location under a bridge, and going through my pockets and various crevices in my body. I'm not getting into somebody else's car voluntarily. But there's a sticker on the back that says Uber driver.
Okay then. Then it's okay.
I've gotten into taxi cabs many times because someone went to the trouble of hiring these people. Somebody went to the trouble of giving them a car with a light up thing on the roof that says whether you're on duty or off duty. And to paint the name of the cab company on the side of the car. Someone went to a lot of trouble there. So there's a lot of licenses and inspections going on here. Getting into somebody else's car because there's a little oval sticker that says Uber on the back of the car. I don't think so. I don't think so. No. And why could I never be an Uber driver? Do you think that I want strangers in my car? Do you think that's any better? What's worse, being in an Uber car with somebody you don't know, or being in an Uber car, it's your car and somebody in the back is somebody you don't know? One way or the other, it makes no sense. I was told when I was a young teenager, don't hitchhike. Don't ever, ever do that. Don't get into a stranger's car. And then Uber came along and said, get into a stranger's car. What the hell? All of a sudden I'm trusting people to take me where I'm supposed to go for the right fee? And then they came up with this system. I don't know much about this. I'm just talking from what I hear. But they came up with a system where you get rated. You rate the driver of the Uber, and the driver of the Uber gets to rate you. How good a passenger were you? Excuse me? What the hell's going on here? You're rating me as a passenger? Excuse me, I'm the one paying the money for the service. Why am I getting rated? I don't understand that at all, if I'm accurate in my assessment. I think Ubers are somehow regulated. I think that the Uber drivers, when you get into their car, have to go through some type of screening process, like, can you drive? Yes. Are you a human being? Maybe. Okay, you're an Uber driver. Here's your little sticker. Put it in the back of the windshield. Come on. You know, I can't. I can't do it. I can't get into a stranger's car. I just can't do it. I can't. I can't do it. And I won't do it. Because where there's an Uber, there's also a taxi cab. I'll take the taxi cab. I don't know which one's more expensive. The one time I was in an Uber that I recall, I was in Brooklyn, and I was going to the Brooklyn Museum, which is a lovely place, by the way. And I was staying in a hotel, which was also a lovely place. But how do I get from one lovely place to the other? And apparently they had Ubers out in front of the hotel. So I said to myself, all right, I'll take a chance. My life is shit anyway. If they drive me to a place under the bridge, then whatever. So I get in the Uber car, and they say, where to, sir? And I say, I'd like to go to the Brooklyn Museum in one piece, not in chopped up in a bag. I think I got a low rating for saying that. But I didn't say that. So I get in the car, and I said, how much is that going to be? And they said, how much you got? No, I don't think they said. I don't really remember. But I paid a certain amount for the Uber. I think it was something like $20 or something, $22 to get there. And it was only like about, I'd say it was no more than a 10-minute car trip, not even. Probably went a mile. So then I get out of the museum after walking around the museum, had a great time in the museum, get out, and there is a line of taxi cabs. And I said, oh, cool. I like taxi cabs in New York. Yeah, sure. Got in the cab, told them the hotel. They said, yes, okay, we're on our way. And the guy started the meter, and I got to the hotel. It was $14. $14, ladies and gentlemen. So the Uber driver, $22. Taxi cab, same distance, same traffic, same two locations, $14. Someone just got their pants reamed. So not only do I not like to be in somebody else's car, by the way, that's a rule whether it's an Uber or not. No, not for me. Sorry. Then I think I took an Uber somewhere in New York City, and it was odd because I wound up under a bridge. No, I didn't. I'm just saying. I don't. Bottom line is I don't trust people. Kind of never did. When I was born, the doctor, I think, put me in my mother's arms for the first time in the hospital room in the maternity ward. I think I remember looking up at my mother and saying to myself, I don't trust that this is actually my mother. Did they make a mistake? Is this the right one? Yeah, I've never trusted. I know in church they say everybody's good. Everybody's good and you got to trust everybody. Well, I do the opposite. You have to earn my trust by performing 5 miracles. First, you have to walk on water, turn water into wine. Well, that's actually the most important one. Even though I don't drink wine, I still think it's very impressive. Anyway, thank you so much. I have a very interesting guest coming up momentarily. We're talking about the mental status of children. I know. It's an interesting topic. The mental status of human beings is a very interesting topic. We've been through a lot. We've been through a president that tried to destroy a democracy and still is in the process of doing so. We went through a pandemic, which is slacking off, but still horrific. We have to deal with technology that is out to destroy us. There's a lot going on. There's inflation. There's a war in Ukraine. There are supply shortages. There's always something. It was a perfect storm of things going wrong when the past. But anyway, so mentally, you know, we've been hardened as a society, but we've been through a lot, excuse the expression, we've been through a lot of shit. We really have. And mentally, you come out on the other end, but not as well as you did going into it. That little security blanket of everything's going to be okay, well, like, when does that start? When do things start being okay? Okay, like, when does that start? So we've been through a lot, ladies and gentlemen. And children, You know, unless you talk to your children, they go through even more because they don't, they're out of control. They have no control whatsoever. They can't drink. They can't smoke. They can't do anything. They can't drive. They can't make decisions. They can't buy things. They have no money. Children are like really defenseless. So they rely on other people to tell them that everything's going to be okay. They have a future in front of them where the planet may not exist at a point, or at least if you're going to exist on the planet, it's going to be a tough ride. If you like water and air, there may not be that much of it anymore. So that's a problem. And children know this, and children are just depending on things getting better somehow, some way. So they're going through a lot of mental stuff. More than we probably know. And that's the topic from today's guest. But first, we're going to take a short commercial break. And when we come back, my guest will join us. And I feel that you will be interestingly informed. But first, this.
Looking for a fun night out? Check out that bar near your house, now featuring live entertainment all weekend. Friday night, it's one guy and a guitar playing 90s cover tunes and original songs about his recent breakup. Catch a dose of classic rock on Saturday nights with that band fronted by that chick you knew in high school who's still pretty hot after a couple drinks. Sunday afternoons, it's three old guys and a hipster doing their very best to play jazz. And don't miss the big hot Sunday dance party with your DJ, the bartender's second wife's stepson with those weird things in his ears. It's all happening this weekend at that bar near your house. Not too far to drive, just a little too far to walk. We'll see you there.
Dr. Laura Erickson-Schroth joins us now. She's Chief Medical Officer with the Jed Foundation. We're talking about something that there's some data here that is quite amazing. We're talking about the kids going back to school, and we've done all the lists about all the items they should bring in their lunchbox and, you know, and the books and all that stuff. But we haven't talked about their mind, where their minds are at. Those conversations don't frequently occur where a parent says, "How are you feeling about going back to school?" I guess some parents don't really know what's going on. It's just so automatic. Is that true?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot going on for young people, and I don't think we talk about it enough, especially with the suicide crisis in our country. So suicide is the third leading cause of death for young people ages 15 to 24, and they're really struggling, and it's important to talk about it.
Yeah, here's a fact that appears on the sheet here. It says nearly half of high school students have persistent feelings of sadness and hopelessness. Oh, my God. Is that fairly accurate?
That's exactly right, yeah. And there's a lot going on that's contributing to that. So young people right now are thinking about things like political and cultural issues, things like wars around the world, racial inequality in our country. They're thinking about existential issues like the climate crisis, and they're doing this all at a time when they're going back to school in the middle of a pandemic. So they've lost a lot of academic opportunities and opportunities for building social skills, you know, and that's why we're talking at the Jed Foundation about these issues, because, you know, with our back to school campaign, we're telling students, you are here, and this is a time for you to think about what's going on and to plan for an emotionally healthy year.
I guess adults don't really think that children or kids are concerned about things like that, about the environment and political situations. And I guess they think they just go out and play and have a good time, that they don't have to have that burden on them. But it does seep in, and that's something I didn't know.
Absolutely. I mean, I work with young people, and these are the things that they're talking about all the time. They're wondering about the economy, even. It really is a difficult time for them, and they're hearing everything that we're experiencing, and they're experiencing it also.
Wow. So I guess one might say, if you're an adult and you're experiencing some depression or concern or anxiety, your kids are feeling that too. How do you approach a child to find out where their heads are at?
Yeah, well, I would say the first thing is to bring it up and talk about it. Make this a part of normal family conversations. Talk about when you're experiencing emotional difficulties and make sure that the young people in your life know that it's okay to, you know, express anger or anxiety or feelings of sadness. Just make it a normal thing. And then when you're having conversations with young people, it's important to make sure that you have a space to talk with them where nobody's distracted,
yeah.
Where you're both able to pay attention to what the other person is saying. And if you've noticed something about a young person in your life and you're worried about them, be specific about what it is that you're worried about. Say that I noticed that, you know, your grades are dropping or that you're not going to play the sports that you used to play or spend time with the friends that you used to spend time with. And really listen to them, you know, sit there and hear what they're going through and don't push them. You know, if they're not ready to talk, I know teenagers in my life and a lot of times they're not ready to talk. They say, I'm fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
And if they're not ready, don't push them. Just be there for them.
It sounds like adults too. They don't want to talk about it either because it makes them, brings it out on the table and that's. It's an interesting thing. And you talk about depression, and the other end is anxiety. They go hand in hand frequently, and anxiety also a similar situation that I think most adults have felt.
Absolutely, especially with the pandemic. You know, both adults and young people are dealing with a lot of anxiety. You know, that's what happens, especially with social anxiety. The less that you interact with other people, the more anxiety you have around each social interaction. And so the most important thing is to get yourself out there and really try to build more social connections,
yeah.
Especially meaningful ones.
Mm. So, Dr. Laura, if I may call you that, how do we handle this? I mean, how does a child manage this kind of stress and anxiety when they're just children and they don't have the life skills?
Yeah, I think there's two really important things that young people can do without any help from anyone else. And that's, you know, things that have been proven through research to help with mental health. One of those is exercise, you know, and I'm not talking about you don't have to join a sports team if you're not into that.
No.
You don't have to join a gym. Just yoga, going on long walks, dancing with your friends, all of that, if you do that a couple times a week, really can help to boost mood. And then the other one is social connection. So in a world where many of us are spending a lot of time online, trying to build in-person, real-life social connections is very important. And also research shows really helps, and especially meaningful social connections. So I always encourage young people that I work with to do things like volunteer, do advocacy work, things where they're giving back to the community so they can really feel like they're doing something for the world.
It's interesting because we've ended up in a virtual kind of lifestyle, but life is not virtual. So there's those things, two things are playing against each other in a very tenuous manner, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there are so many positives and negatives to, you know, a lot of our lives being on the internet and social media. So, you know, there's the obvious negatives, which are for young people, there's a lot of comparison and not feeling good enough. There's also a lot of information overload.
Yeah.
So, you know, studies show that these days we're, you know, the amount of information that we're exposed to in one day is equal to what our ancestors 500 years ago would have been exposed to in their entire lifetime.
Oh, wow.
Right. But there are also some really good things about social media and being connected over the internet, and especially for young people who aren't able in person to spend that much time with other people like them. So, you know, especially LGBTQ young people who might live in areas where there aren't other young people who they identify with, young people of color growing up in white areas. So the internet has really, in some ways, connected young people who weren't connected to each other.
Yeah. Well, that's the good side. To every good side, there's a bad side, unfortunately, to most things in life. So where do we go to get some guidance here, how to start the conversation, how to start resolving or at least making us feel a bit more comfortable about it? I assume there's a great website somewhere.
Absolutely. So at the JET Foundation, we always have a mental health resource center that has information for parents and for young people. And right now we have our Back to School campaign, which is You Are Here. And that's at jetfoundation.org/backtoschool.
Well, you've opened my eyes about what's behind the curtain, so to speak. Like the Wizard of Oz, there's someone back there. And there's something in your child's mind, and you should take a look behind that curtain sometimes. Going back to school, I was traumatized going back to school when I was a kid, and I know teachers are traumatized going back to school. So it's a whole traumatization going on there.
And we're here for young people, and we know what they're going through, and we're absolutely here to help.
Great. And thank you for what you do, by the way. I do appreciate that. One more time, that website and how to contact.
Absolutely. It's jedfoundation.org/backtoschool.
Perfect. That's been important, and we appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time today. You've been wonderful. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new program. Thank you to you, and thank you to my guests, and thank you to the Uber driver. But until next time, I wish you peace.